flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Can't believe it. It's the final hour of the week here on the Hoffman Show. Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. What happened to my voice there, Anthony? Always live as well.
Whoa. That's a
what just
scary,
happened
bro.
To me? It was scary. Did you not hear it happen the first time?
I did.
I don't think, I mean, obviously accentuated a little. Anyway, we should keep things moving as fast as possible. Coming up at 6:30, Logan Paulson. He's really smart. For some reason, he still works with me. Logan and I will preview how Jaden Daniels can try to break this Vic Fangio defense via take command. That's at 6:30. Right now, though, it is time for a Friday edition of the Pick 6.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
Wake up, Anthony. See you rubbing your eyes over there. Wake up. We got six players to pick.
I had something in my eye.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fair. All right, six players on a Friday that we think will have an outsized impact in the game on Sunday. The only rules are that we cannot pick the quarterbacks. No Jaden Daniels, no Jalen Hurts. Eagles and Commanders both on the table. Anthony, since I went first last week and second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth, I will allow you the first pick this week now that you have returned.
Number one.
Should I start on the Eagles offense or defense, Craig?
Offense.
Okay, then I'm going to go with Saquon Barkley. I think everybody knows that, though.
Saquon Barkley. I think that is probably the correct answer, Anthony. Why did you pick Saquon Barkley? Is
I'm going with Saquon.
Needs that explained to them.
In the first two games, I want to say the first game, 26 carries, 146 on the ground, two tuds. And to be honest, in the second game, he also had his first quarter anyway, 7 carries for 109 yards, 2 tuds. And then after that, we, you know, stifled him a little bit, slowed him down. But even if you just take those 3 big touchdown runs that he had and disregard those, even though it's hard to do it, I think we've done a solid job containing Saquon Barkley. It's just the fact that when he has that crease where he can break off a 23-yarder or a 32-yarder or a 68-yarder, that's when, you know, it starts to, you know, break the back of, you know, the Commanders' defense. So I think if we can just do a good job of being disciplined, and Joe Wood talked about it earlier today, just stand in your lanes, everybody coming down, tackling him as a whole, and then, like, we'll be able to, you know, limit him to an extent. But we just don't want him rattling off 2, 3, 20, 30-yard runs every game.
The chunks are what's going to kill you, and specifically the touchdowns. Honestly, I can live. Man, if his long rush is 30 in this game, as long as it's not like 3 of them and they're all from the 30-yard line, you know. But like, if he busts a 30-yarder from the 20 and gets to midfield, and that's the longest rush he has all game, like, fine.
Yeah,
fine. To me, you can't give up 2 big ones. You give up 1 big one, even. Okay, that's gonna hurt the average. That's gonna hurt the EPA per play. That's gonna hurt all the statistics. But I can live with 1. I can't live with 2 or more. That's where he crushes you. And you can't, as Dan Quinn said and Joe said, you can't get bored just doing the right thing. And he challenges that as much as anyone because he has a great way of just like pressing and pressing and finding the front side of a run. And then you think he's going to hit that backside and you start to get a little antsy. I'm going to go get him. And then you vacate your gap and then bang, he goes exactly where he was trying to go the whole time, to the front side. But he really pushes that stuff. And, I'm trying to remember which pod it was. It might have been Robert and Derek. It might have been Mina on her show. I think it was Mina. Had really remarkable stat. The Commanders are actually the best team in the league on inside the tackle runs this year. They just
because
Bobby's in there.
True.
Like, they don't let those things get out in between the tackles, and they don't, they actually do a good job of like holding the line. But because Frankie and Bobby, especially Bobby, like fire down, they have been the best or one of the best, depending on which statistic you're using, in between the tackles this season. Outside the tackles, they're bottom five in the league. So think of the big runs that teams have gotten on them. They're not like off the center at those guys in the middle. It's when you get those guys moving and you can kind of push them out of the way a little bit and get a gap to develop. And then, you know, Chin or Frankie doesn't quite get where they're supposed to be, or Bobby gets caught up in the wash. And then all of a sudden that gets out. Dorrance Armstrong jumps up field, like Dante jumps up field, and then a run gets out. Like, that's where you absolutely get crushed against the Eagles, because they're so prolific at getting on the edge. Their line is so fast, so mobile, so agile, so powerful. And then Saquon. So I think that's the challenge, is you know where your weakness is. You know where you can get hurt. Can you find a way to shore that up? And can you just be ultimately laser focused? Like, the task is hard because it's not just Saquon. It's the best offensive line probably in the league, and certainly the best at this in the league. And so if you can focus and not make any mental mistakes and execute physically, you have a shot. Because Saquon's not the fall forward, get you 5-6 yards. Like, he'll get 3, then 2, and like then they're behind the chains, and now Jalen Hurts has to beat you. And I feel better about that than I do. They gave the ball to Saquon, and he got 20 yards, 1st and 10 again. So can you get that? And it's not even like it's 2nd and 5, right? It's going to be 2nd and 7. And then what do they do? Can you make it 3rd and 5? Now Jalen has to beat you. That to me is the real question, is can you just prevent the big one time and time and time again? Because they're going to run it. And then the other part is, can you score on them offensively to try to get them out of running the football? Which leads us to
number 2.
I have put this man in every single week in the playoffs. I'm not stopping now. Number 2 is number 2. Deami Brown. The Commanders need to find explosive plays in this game. It is how they broke the Eagles last time. Some of it was like the coverage busts were on the OZ touchdown, where they were playing man-to-man. The guy who initially had OZ on or in man was the 12th man on the field. He ran off. Jaden extends the play. No one's covering OZ because it's man-to-man and he's got no man. And there's a touchdown. Okay, fine. But they also were able to get the ball deep behind the secondary in a way that they have not, or most other teams have not against the Eagles. And whether it's Terry, who I try not to pick in this just because, duh, Terry needs to have a big game, or Deami, like, he's the other option. So to me, Deami becomes enormously important, especially if Kenyon Mitchell is either out or banged up. And we should actually have an injury report. Let me pull that up in a second here. But that becomes an enormous, enormous part of what Washington is doing. And then also, you know, obviously we see the screen to Terry last week, but Deami's consistently been their best screen guy. If the Eagles are going to give some space because they're playing these zones or zone matches, then they're at least going to start off the line of scrimmage. Can you then get that blocked up and maybe get a few, you know, I don't want to say like a few explosives off screens. If you can, that's amazing. But for a Commanders team that has struggled to run the football until last week, can that be a replacement for your running game? Because if you can stay on schedule, if you can stay, you know, in 2nd and 3 and open up your playbook, like, that is enormously beneficial. And the Commanders can often do that with the screen game. And Deami's been probably their most consistent guy on that all season. So Deami Brown's coming in at number 2 for me.
Number three, Mr. Craig Hoffman. I'm going to go with Frankie Louvu. In the first two games against the Eagles, he's shown up in both games. First game, he had 2 sacks, 10 tackles. Like, he was all over the field. Granted, you know, we end up losing. And then in the second matchup, he had an interception, also 7 tackles. So I'm looking forward, Frankie, just to have, like, some type of huge impact plays. Like, he's played solid, you know, this postseason so far. But I think there's more that, you know, we've gotten from him this season, and I'm expecting him to go out there, have a big game, show up everywhere all over the field, whether it's in the pass rush or slumping in the run game. But I'm expecting him to have some type of game-changing play this game around.
Man, like, JD5, or sorry, Frankie, the way that he was able to change, I'm trying to read and talk at the same time. Doesn't always work as I'm trying to pull up this injury report. But Frankie, the way that he changed that last matchup. I mean, they being the Eagles, were rolling to start that game. And then they have to put in Pickett, and then he lures Pickett into that interception. And that changed the entire game. And so whether it's a play like that, or if you can do that to Hurts, right? Can you do that? You know, playing him as a spy potentially, like Frankie's got the athleticism to do that, where the scrambles have hurt Washington in the past, or as a pass rusher. I think the biggest thing for me is, like, can they finish? They've gotten pressure on Hurts this season, and Hurts takes a lot of sacks. Can they just finish the pressures? If they can do that, they can hold this offense as long as they're not giving up big ones to Saquon, as discussed. So I think that's a really good pick, and I think he has a huge, huge chance to shape this game. Again, if they can go +2 in the turnover margin, I won't say I don't know how the Eagles come back from that, because, man, if the Commanders had been just +2 instead of +5 last week, they might have lost 48-45. It was that crazy of a game. But I don't think the Eagles have that kind of gas, unless Saquon just runs for 300. And Lord, knock on wood till my phone falls on the floor. But, like, outside of that, I don't think they have that kind of gas. I know they have the players, but, like, structurally, if Washington is like, we're going to put the lid on it, I don't know that they have that kind of gas. So I think that's definitely going to be an interesting thing to watch. And Frankie, not just the other thing I'll add, not just in the pass game, his not making mistakes in the run game. Because there are times this year he's been the guy. He's been the guy that hasn't been in his gap. He gets a little antsy, tries to fire inside, tries to do something, or he gets blocked. Like, that's not the best part of his game, which is fine. He does plenty of other stuff that's at a more than worthy of having it level. But that is definitely something to watch on Sunday. All right, we got three more players to talk about in our pick six at 6 before Logan jumps on to talk with us about how Jaden can break this Vic Fangio defense. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports, presented by Wawa. Chicken how you want it at Wawa, the customizable or crispy roasted chicken sandwiches. You'll hear from Logan Paulson before the end of the show. Big fella breaking down how Jaden Daniels can break this Eagles defense in the NFC Championship game. We'll get to it coming up in about 10 minutes. Right now, though, we continue our pick six at 6, where we pick 6 players we think have an outsized impact in the game. And the one I'm going to pick for number 4, Anthony, is one that we hope the outsizedness is, wow, that was a lot less than we expected.
Number four
is Jalen Carter. And I would pick a commander here, but I don't know with 100% certainty who the commander responsible is. I guess I could have gone Tyler Beata. She's got to be on point with getting everything targeted and making sure that Jalen Carter gets the attention he deserves. But probably Trent Scott starting at right guard. We'll see. He's a guy that did a tremendous job filling in last week, the tackle by position, bouncing down inside. But Jalen Carter has become one of them dudes in the NFL. Just truly one of the absolute best interior players. One of the best D linemen, period, in the league. Disruptive and destructive against the run. Absolute nightmare in the pass. He's got a knack for punching the ball out. So when you run at him, he's dangerous. When you run away from him, he's fast enough that if you try to pull and all that kind of stuff away from him, he'll chase down your back from the backside. Like, you have to toss sweep away from him and hope that he doesn't catch you. Like, it's dealing with him is a nightmare. And to do it without Sam Cosmi, who had his own struggles against Jalen Carter, that's how good Jalen Carter is. That Sam Cosmi, who's one of the best 5 right guards in the NFL, was like, I got my hands full with this dude. Now you got Trent Scott, maybe Andrew Wiley, maybe Michael Dieter, maybe Chris Paul. One of them dudes is going to have to block Jalen Carter with probably some help. But dealing with Jalen Carter personnel-wise, and then whatever Cliff chooses to do schematically to try to give some help, I think it's going to be interesting. Like, do you just say, we're going to have a lot of 6-man protections when we throw, we're going to sacrifice an eligible, and we're going to have John Bates in the game a lot, and we're going to trust John Bates to block a defensive end one-on-one, because we're going to block down and have Andrew Wiley and, say, Trent Scott share the responsibility of Jalen Carter? Like, these are the questions that I would be asking this week in those meetings, and we'll see what solutions they come up with on Sunday.
Yeah, and one thing with Jalen Carter, Aaron Donald called him his replacement. I think that's a little scary, but it's also indicative.
I almost just crawled under my desk, Anthony.
Who he is. Like, he is a bad
No,
man.
He's not wrong. He's not. Logan said that this week, and I was like, relax. no one's Aaron Donald, to be clear. Yeah. Aaron Donald was Jalen Carter plus, plus, plus. That's not to say that Jalen Carter isn't, like, on a Hall of Fame track with how good he is. That's just how good Aaron Donald was.
Yeah.
Number five.
Number five, Mr. Craig Hoffman. I'm going to go. I'm not sure if you had him in your pick six last week. I think, I don't know. John Allen, was he in your pick six last week?
No, he should have been. I had Deron Payne instead.
Yeah, I'm going with John Allen this game. And one, I think of all the interior defensive linemen, really all of the defensive line, he's the freshest. And I think a lot of that was on display last weekend just because I want to say that was probably one of John Allen's best games in the last 2 years, if I'm being quite frank. Granted, you know, he didn't get the sack on Jared Goff when he had the pass to Sam
Laporta touchdown.
But the pressure, the fact that he was...
It should have been good enough to force an incompletion. That's just an all-time catch by Laporta.
Yeah. But I'm expecting him just to be able to go out there and sort of kind of duplicate the performance he had last week. We're going to need that. And also in the game against the Bucks, where, you know, he didn't really have a lot of stats to, like, show for, but the fact that he was good at the point of attack, he allowed Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu to get downhill to, you know, fill the holes and tackle Bucky Irvin in the backfield, things of that nature. We're going to need that. Just because when we had Chase, when we had Montez, everybody was playing for themselves. And it seems that he's bought in, Deron Payne is bought in, and they're allowing and trusting their linebackers to come up, fill the holes, and, you know, do what they got to do, to be honest. So,
yeah,
I think Deron Allen's going to have a good game.
Yeah, I think that is a definite good call. Also, it's worth mentioning, as we have pulled up the injury report, Cam Jurgens is questionable for this game, their starting center. So if all of a sudden Landon Dickerson has to slide down and play center, you have a backup at left guard, and then obviously a guy in Dickerson who's awesome, one of the highest paid and best guards in football, playing out of position, and they're targets and all that kind of stuff. Like, how used is he of calling protections? Obviously, he's not used to it. He's probably capable, but it's a different beast. And so I think John could then make that a nightmare. Also, speaking of injury report, Deron missed all 3 days of practice this week. Now, he's been around long enough that he doesn't need to practice to play, but it's not like he's Bobby Wagner. Now, defensive line is also probably the simplest position, if we're being honest, but just that's worth noting. So it might be a higher snap count. It might be a higher need for John to play a little bit more. We know that last year they got played way too much in terms of the rotation, and Dan likes to roll deep, but you might need a little bit more John Allen, and you definitely need a lot from John Allen if you're going to get this dub on Sunday.
Number six.
Last but not least, how about a former Eagle to close this thing down? Zach Ertz. Commanders just don't have a lot of guys to beat man-to-man coverage. It's just not how this roster is built from wide receiver standpoint. It's certainly on the to-do list for the offseason, which is something we hope is still 3 weeks away. But Zach Ertz is one of those guys. And specifically, if he's matched up with Gardner Johnson, who's a wild card. I almost put him in here. It's like, can we get a bad CJ game? Or do we get a great CJ game? Because that dude is a nightmare in more ways than one. But also Zach Bond, who's been just the revelation this year at inside linebacker. He's obviously playing fantastic ball. But N'Kobe Dean is out, you know, so can they take advantage of Oren Burks, their middle linebacker, as Dean went out for the season? So I think there's a lot of different things that are interesting and intriguing about the matchups. But ultimately, like, in gotta have it situations, if the Eagles play man, which is what you would think they would do based off the fact that Jaden is not as effective from an efficiency standpoint against man as he is versus zone, Zach is one of those guys that he can rely upon to win one-on-one. Can you get enough separation that you create a window that you can use your big body to catch the football? And I think he's really essential. I thought about Jameson. Obviously, he had the big game last time out. In the short areas, he can be good against man-to-man, but he's not a guy who's going to beat you with long speed. And Cooper DeJean's really quick in the slot. So I think finding the matchups is going to be really tough for this offense because they just don't, like, you're going to have to rely on scheme. That's kind of what they've been. And then Jaden is great at finding space. The Eagles don't give you a lot of space. But Zach Ertz is a guy who knows how to manipulate space. He's really reliable. And I think to go back into Philly and have a big game, and especially if they need him to find some things in the red zone, man, how cool would that be for Ertz to do that in Philadelphia, an Eagles legend going back for Washington and doing the damn thing. That's just a nice poetry to it. And this season full of stories. Why not one more? Why not one more?
It will be cinema if he did that.
Cinema.
Oh, my God.
Cinema. Get those cameras ready. All right. That's our pick six. NFC Championship Edition. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, take command. Logan and I talking about how Jaden Daniels can get it done and take the Commanders to the Super Bowl. It's the Hoffman Show. We're live on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. To wrap us up, can't let you leave on a Football Friday without a little bit of Paulson. So how does Jaden Daniels break the Eagles defense like few quarterbacks did, but he did in Week 16? Again, take command. Takes us home.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. Take Command Podcast. Logan Paulson there. Craig Hoffman here. It's NFC Championship Week. And that means we have Commanders Eagles to preview, the thing that we've thought all along. Jokes like that are never going to get old, Logan.
Yeah, absolutely. Never going to get old. So here we are talking about the Eagles again for the third time, and we're going to try and bring some new spicy takes on the Eagles as we go. So,
yep. Two teams that have gotten here by doing essentially what they do. What new information could we uncover? Yeah. I don't know. Let's find out over the next 45 minutes to an hour. All right, we're going to start off with the offense of the Commanders and when Jaden Daniels has the ball. And I do think there's some interesting choices for Vic Fangio to make. And because we have two games worth of data, we've actually seen him make both choices this year. And surprisingly, after choice one worked the first time, they didn't do it again in game two. They tried to mix it up and it did not go as well. That choice, Logan, is they pressured Jaden Daniels the lowest that anybody did all season in their Week 11 matchup. The Eagles then had their second highest blitz rate of the season for them in Week 16 against Jaden. And the first one didn't really do a whole lot offensively, did Washington. Yeah. The second one, Jaden threw five touchdown passes. So it might seem that they might not blitz a whole lot, but also teams can't stop blitzing Jaden even though he's great against it. What do we think happens on Sunday on that side of the ball?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because, like, even when they do pressure, it's not like they're not like crazy pressures. I think when you think of like blitzing, people think of like Detroit or Tampa Bay, and probably because of the teams who've played most recently. Philly is kind of pressuring in a little bit more conservative of a manner. Like, it's all sim pressures. It's all like they occasionally rush six, but that's usually on rundowns, like as a way to stop the run, kind of build a run structure. But like when they're rushing the passer, they're just trying to get to like a four-man overload, right? So they're just trying to bring one and then one extra, and then they're usually dropping someone out. So it's like true zone four-man pressures. So like even those pressures, even though they seem – it sounds like Philadelphia was being very aggressive, I thought it was just a nice way for them to get to different rush patterns. And when you go back and watch the first half of the second game, it really – befuddled Washington in a way that was kind of unexpected. Like, they had a really hard time picking it up and some of the empty protections and things like that. So what I would say is I'd expect there to be a mix of both. I think they take the things that worked in the second game and also the things that worked in the first game. And ultimately, what I think is that you probably say, we want to, as Philadelphia, rush for play coverage, whether that's man, quarters, match, whatever it is, probably a little bit more man. They've played more man the back half of the year, right? And just say, we will throw the change up of these zone pressures, which were very effective. We're just going to be a little bit more selective about when they do them. And so if that's the case, I think that makes it a little bit harder to prep because, you know, one of the things about Jaden Daniels and this offense and Cliff Kingsbury is if you get like a good feel and a good bead. So for example, like when we were talking in our production meeting, it was like, if they're playing a lot of man and rushing four, what's the plan? It's like, right. I'm going to send the protection to Jalen Carter. I'm going to make sure there's even chip help maybe on Jalen Carter with the back or whatever we're going to do. I'm going to kind of say the tackles, you're on your own. We're going to really focus on him as someone we need to protect. And then I'm going to run a lot of man-beating concepts that get the ball out quickly, right? However, if they start bringing some of this sim, you know, four-man rush, four-man overload pressure, they were going to play a little bit more zone behind it, that becomes a little bit more complicated to do. And so I think you'll probably see a mix of both, just because I think it's good defense. Take what worked well. Don't overexpose yourself, right? Because I think that's something we were talking about, is maybe they overexposed themselves in the second matchup, while also bringing that conservative, solid approach that you had in the first one.
So the Eagles have gotten pressure on over half of their blitzes against Daniels this season, 52.4%, but came away with just one sack. So despite the pressure, Daniels has taken advantage of the less coverage defenders by completing 11 of 17 passes against the blitz for 193 yards and three touchdowns per Next Gen Stats. So I think the thing with him, the more I think about it, the more I watch, the more I talk to people, is he just has like a supernatural spatial awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily that he's and I'm not saying this verbatim, like this is how he processes it, but this is kind of how I watch it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not even that he's like reading the coverage. It's just like, oh, there's space. Like he just has an ability to see space as a runner and certainly as a passer, where it's like, oh, that blitzer's coming. There's space behind. I know my route concept. I'm about to have a guy sit down right there. I'm going to fire the ball to him. And he just seems to have like a supernatural awareness of where, almost like he has a heat map of the field and he can see where the gaps are. And when you take defenders out of coverage, then he can find that extra space with a regularity that's, you know, amongst the best in the NFL, period. Nevertheless, for a rookie, nevertheless, for a guy who can also hurt you with his leg. So I think that's the conundrum is, you know, in week one, they just didn't do that. Or week 11, I should say, they didn't do that. 12.5% blitz rate. So they had seven in coverage all the time. And in week 16, 35%. And that's just too many opportunities for him, man or zone, to find where that extra space is and where he should be distributing the football.
Yeah, and it's funny, when you look at the second matchup, I actually thought the Philadelphia Eagles defense did a good job outside of like four plays. You know, I remember there's the explosive play to Diami, there's the explosive play to Terry, there's the explosive play to OZ. And those things are traditionally not stuff that the Philadelphia Eagles defense gives up. But like one of the things that happened in that game is Jaden Daniels would break the pocket or extend or mess up the timing with the type of arc that he was putting on the football. I think we talked about that in the review show. Like he's putting these balls out there, you know, like with tremendous arc, tremendous timing, letting the receivers run under it. And I just wonder how repeatable that is. And I wonder if you're Vic Fangio, are you worried about that? Or are you just like saying like, he's not going to do this again? Because again, those are relatively low percentage throws. Like there's a ton of variance in those kind of deep down the field shots. A lot of defenses kind of encourage you to take those shots because they are so low percentage. And then you say like, well, he got the explosive play to OZ where he broke contain and they had 12 men on the field. They ran the man coverage player off the field that had OZ and it led to an explosive play. So I kind of wonder if they kind of say like that's the anomaly in this and we just got to do what we do well, kind of what you're saying, and just stick with the things that we did so well in the week 11 matchup. Because again, this defense is very, very good. And, you know, they are a little bit banged up in the secondary. Quinyon Mitchell's on the injury report this week, so that'll be interesting if they feel like they have to be more aggressive if he's out of the lineup. But again, like they just do so much well, the Philadelphia defense, that I'm kind of like, maybe that was an anomaly from an offensive performance for Washington, and they just kind of say, hey, we're going to throw the fastball right down the middle and see if you can hit it.
I definitely think that's possible. I mean, Vic Fangio's been one of the best DCs in this league for a long, long time. And if he's like, I trust my stuff, I'm going to do it, especially with the talent he's got, I think it's hard to argue. The problem is there's a next-gen stat for this too. Daniel's completing 52.2% of his passes when targeting vertical routes this season, fifth highest in the NFL, highest marked by a rookie since 2018. But here's the kicker in terms of, is this an anomaly on these bigger vertical routes? I know not all of the big plays they hit were verticals.
Anomaly is not. It's like, you know, statistical. I'm calling statistical variance. At some point, is it going to regress, right? Yeah, okay.
So Daniels led the league with 14.6 yards per attempt on such passes, throwing 12 touchdowns, including four in week 16 against the Eagles, and only three picks. Yeah. So it would tell you that you can take that bet on statistical variance, but it's not the 50-50 or even more tilted in the defense's favor that it would be against most quarterbacks. So I think that, you know, ultimately, like I had a great conversation with Robert yesterday the radio show. And there's two things that he said that I thought were really, really smart on this. One, I think that when we talk about man coverage against mobile quarterbacks, there's this notion, this thought that you can't do it because our eyes are on the receivers and it's going to open up run lanes. And he said the numbers don't actually bear that out. Scrambling quarterbacks will hurt you just as evenly against zone as they do against man. So the idea that like we can't play man against Jaden Daniels is silly because of that reason. Now, maybe there's other reasons you don't want to. The numbers would say that's actually incorrect, that he'll destroy zones at a much higher rate. The other part of that is if you look at just the roster construction of Washington's offense, I would make the receiving talent beat me. And maybe that's a more difficult proposition now that De'Ami Brown has discovered a new level. But I would, if I was Philly, I would be willing to take that bet and challenge that. You know, Jameson is very skilled in a very specific set of things, but OZ, same thing. But these guys are not the best receivers in football who crush man-to-man coverage. They're great zone receivers who have a good feel, can get down, find the space, make guys miss after the catch. But you got to get open first against man. And so I just tend to think that they should lean maybe the heaviest. I mean, they've been playing a lot more man second half of the season.
It's like 60%, right? Or something like that. It's like
that
crazy
quarter's
jump.
Match has gone straight man in a lot of situations. And so it's something they're comfortable doing. It has been the Achilles heel of Washington's offense. Last week against Detroit, just a 41% success rate on dropbacks where it's 4 or 5 man pressures and man coverage on the back end. Like, I think you kind of have to make them beat you that way. And then it comes to the question of, can Jaden do it? And I think he can, but it's the hardest way for him to play.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I think back to, again, I've referenced this before, but Pittsburgh played them that way. And it's not like he wasn't seeing it effectively. It's the throws were just a touch off. You know what I mean? They're just a touch off. And that was kind of with the rib injury. And then you look at the Philly game, and again, the rib injury is still a common thread here. But like he was seeing it well. He just, the throws were into such tight windows. Then you look at the third game with Philly. So I'm kind of looking at these three games as case studies. And in the first half, I actually thought, man, like that's a really good throw on a tight window dig with a man coverage player. It wasn't man, but like he's matching the dig. It's a tight window throw and the ball gets dropped. Or here's a slant, tight window, ball gets dropped. And so there is an element to like he sees it okay, but the ball just isn't completed at a super high percentage the way it is in these other coverage structures that you're seeing. So I think maybe that's the point here. This is the other thing I wanted to, I think you brought up a good point. Like you want him to play man coverage. And again, the Washington receivers aren't the best at consistently beating man coverage. Like they're a good group. They've punched above their weight class. Terry McLaurin's done a great job. De'Ami's resurgence is amazing. All those things. But I also think the thing about Philly that makes them so effective is the rush coupled with the coverage is something that is very unique to them. They've got guys, a lot of guys that can win one-on-ones. Williams and Carter on the interior do a great job when you watch them. They push the pocket at a really high level. Nolan Smith's playing a lot better. Sweat's playing well. Jalix Hunt, I think is the guy's name, number 58 for them, is starting to play better on the perimeter and create consistent pressure. He's kind of this power, strong build rusher. And I just am like, man, that's the thing that becomes problematic is dudes will get open. But the rush has been so consistent for them. Like they don't really have to blitz. They do sometimes, obviously, but like that's the thing that makes that defense good. It's like they're the gatekeepers for the coverage. Like they basically are like, you will not have to cover longer than 1.7 seconds because one of us is going to win. And that shows up pretty consistently when you watch them on film. And it's not, maybe it doesn't show up in pressure rates, but the way they affect the passer is very, very high. And I was talking to Dan Quinn about this at the beginning of the season. He's like, you know, sometimes our pressure rate is different than like the NFL or Pro Football Focus pressure rate because like, let's say you bull the guard back into the quarterback's lap, like that's affecting his process in terms of throwing. And we count that as a pressure, even though like you're not on the other side of the guard, and that would be technically a pressure by PFF's metric. So I think that's really another story for me that is somewhat compelling. I think the coverage structure is a big deal, but like again in the second matchup when they were blitzing a little bit, like he was finding the open guy. He just couldn't deliver the ball because the rush was so aggressive. And so I think that's to me another huge story, especially with Sam Cosmi out. Like, you know, how do you kind of balance all that?
Yeah, I think we're going to get to that in 10 seconds. But I think the other thing too, that's, you know, about Jaden is, speeding him up isn't necessarily the best way to get the worst out of him if you're a defense, because he sees it so quick. It's almost like, can you slow him down and have him sit back there and get kind of antsy in the pocket and feel like he should be running or he should be having the ball out? That's when he sometimes takes some sacks or, you know, gets a little greedy. So I think that's something to watch too. With like, do they, how much do they aggressively rush and how much do they mush rush with four or with more?
Well, it's like the second interception that he had against Philly, right? He gets flushed. He's holding on the ball. He's trying to make a play. He throws the ball late over the middle of the field. And he doesn't do that a lot, right? He's been very, very good about not turning the football over. But, you know, he is a human being and he does make mistakes. And I felt like that was a good example of where it's like, you know, they kind of, it wasn't a mush rush necessarily, but they kind of flush him from the pocket. He's trying to make a play, makes a bad decision. So I think that's another element too, is like, you know, what kind of game flow is this going to be for the offense? And can you be a little bit more conservative? Do you see some more punts in this game than we have from Dan Quinn? Because the Philly offense doesn't really put the screws to you the same way Detroit does. They're a little bit, it's a slower paced game. It's like, it's a very 1980s style of football. It's like, we're going to play great defense, and they do, they consistently play great defense, and we're going to run the ball. And we're going to shorten the game. We're going to win by one possession. And so, like, do you feel the same urgency to, like, maximize every possession the way they did versus Detroit? I don't know. That's
I would. I would. I want to make this game a track meet.
I know. I think that's right. But I think, like, so, for example, like, let's say you're on your 40, you're on the 50-yard line, right? Is it because you know that you're not going to get lapped the same way by the offense? Like, do you just punt it? I agree. You want to come out and score. I just saw a crazy statistic. And since the last game, which I think was what, week 16? When did they play them last? Week 16?
Yeah, week 16.
Phillies only trailed for 5 minutes. 5 minutes in all those games. That's including the playoffs. They are used to winning a very specific type of game. They don't play from behind. They play with a lead. They lean on their defense. They lean on the run game. Jalen Hurts is way deleveraged right now in the offense. And that's how they win games. So if, to your point, if you can get out and put them in a 7-point deficit, like, what happens? Do they just try to throw the ball over the yard and they can't operate in the game flow that they want? So I think that's, that again, that's a really interesting element too, in terms of how aggressive you are offensively and the messaging you give to Jaden Daniels. Cause maybe it's like, hey, we don't need to be hyper aggressive like we were against Detroit, but that's the thing that's kind of got you to this point as an offense and as a team, is that you are very aggressive. So I think there are some really interesting storylines from that standpoint as well.
Yeah, Commanders averaging 34 a game in the playoffs. Philly's giving up 16 a game in the playoffs. So two very contrasting styles on this side
16?
Of the ball.
16? Man.
16. 16 points per game in the playoffs. All right, here we go. Wrapping up on the NFC Championship edition of a Friday edition of the Hoffman Show. On the team 980. Anthony, there is one thing left to do, my friend. It's pick the game. We've given all our keys. We've said what we think is going to happen in terms of the matchups and who's important and things to watch. We've done the thing that we do. We brought great, great guests. We have Mark Rypien, Ian Eagle, Kevin Burkhart just today here on the show. Now is the rubber meets the road on the pick side of it, which we chalk up is important. I've said all week, the thing I feel most comfortable about is Washington plus 6 or plus 5.5 or plus 6.5. It's been all three at various times this week. It's been a weird week, man. And I thought I would bring myself to picking Washington by Friday straight up. And I don't think I'm there. But they obviously can win. And if I picked against them both playoff games, did I pick against them in Tampa?
You picked against them last week, and I think you picked against them Tampa too.
So let's just not mess with a good thing. I would love nothing more than be wrong. I don't care if I'm wrong. I think if his teams play 10 times, the Eagles win 6, the Commanders win 4. So for that reason, I'll pick Philly. I don't want to be right. I don't care about being right. Over the course of the season, I put a lot of stock in my picks. I don't put a lot of stock in this one. Anthony, the floor is yours to do the thing.
Mr. Craig Hoffman, I will tell you right now, Anthony Haney III will be eating himself a good luck glizzy at the halftime of Sunday's NFC Championship game. Give me them Commanders, baby. Give me them. 27-20. We're going to the Super Bowl, dog. New Orleans. Here we come.
Anthony and his good luck glizzies. Anthony, if you go to the game, you're going to have to get a hot dog at halftime.
Oh, I most definitely will, sir. Right, no question.
How can we argue with the good luck glizzy? It's powered 7 wins so far. See if we can power an 8th and a trip to New Orleans. We'll talk about it right back here on Monday. See you then on the Hoffman Show. Let's go, Commanders.